Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The run-up to the 2012 presidential election season has begun. Today, we talk about the GOP field. Some candidates have already declared to have dropped out. Other candidates are exploring their chances. Joining me in the studio to talk about the key players, key issues, Neil King of the Wall Street Journal, Republican strategist Doug High, independent analyst Stuart Rothenberg, and Brendan Steinhauser of Freedom Works. We'll take your calls throughout the hour. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on the people you've seen thus far, what your thoughts are. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Neil King, who are emerging as the serious players?
Well, I think it's pretty clear the carnage of the last week with two of the big players having dropped out, Mike Huckabee, Donald Trump. I mean, both of them were uncertain about whether they would even run. A lot of people discounted whether they would. But for a while, particularly Donald Trump, ate up a lot of oxygen, and you put the two together, they were averaging about 30-35% of the polls, so that's gone away. A lot of their supporters seem, in early polling, to have gone over to Mitt Romney. I think at the moment he's clearly the front runner, but historically we have a totally bizarre situation where Stu would be able to probably elaborate on this better than I, but we've never seen a time where the entire field was essentially under 20%. The Republicans tend to nominate front runners, and they tend by this moment, you know, this far away from the election, to have somebody who's polling in the 25-30%. With somebody close behind. At this point, we have basically everybody either in the teens in terms of national opinion polls or well under the teens, you know, in single digits. And that's what's particularly strange about this field.
Doug High, was Donald Trump a serious candidate?
No, I think you talk to most Republicans, they would tell you that they took his candidacy or you know, media circus, as it were, about as seriously as they took his involvement in WrestleMania, which is to say, not seriously at all. It certainly made a lot of noise, but there was nothing substantive about it, nothing to suggest that he would do the hard work that needs to happen to be a candidate.
And were you surprised that Mike Huckabee dropped out?
If you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I would say I wasn't surprised. If you'd asked me 6 months ago, I'd say very surprised. Huckabee has a very strong following, and so one of the things that we'll have to follow over the coming days and weeks is where his supporters really go. We're just not sure yet.
Stuart Rothenberg, who is heading to New Hampshire?
Well, everybody's going to New Hampshire, Diane, whether or not necessarily going is Iowa. You have an interesting split developing between candidates who believe that Iowa is the jumping-off point for this contest. They want to gain credibility, momentum, respect. If Michelle Bachmann gets in the race, for example, Iowa is her launching pad because they have certain kinds of voters, culturally conservative voters in Iowa. Evangelicals made up 60% of Republican caucus attendees last time. For other people, probably Mitt Romney, certainly John Huntsman, they're going to go directly to New Hampshire. So we have this strange field now where, without a front runner, as everybody seems to agree here, where people are looking for the place to begin their campaign, to generate excitement. They don't want to be tested early in places where they don't think they can do well. So that adds to the uncertainty of the dynamic of the race. Because remember, we talk about this Republican contest as if there are, you know, 6, 8, 10 people in the race. But it's really individual contests that will winnow the field.
And Brendan Steinhauser, it would seem that Newt Gingrich got himself into a little problem this week.
He did, and he's been doing this for the last couple of years. And kind of the conventional wisdom was that he would have, you know, Tea Party support or conservative support out there. But I never met a Tea Partier that supported him for president anyway, mostly because of his record of backing Bob Bennett in Utah against Tea Party candidate Mike Lee, backing Didi Scosafava over Doug Hoffman in upstate New York 23, his support for the Wall Street bailout, which essentially created this wave that became the Tea Party movement. And now you've got him out there talking about his support for the individual mandate and criticizing Paul Ryan, who is trying to actually do something serious about the budget and the deficits that we have in entitlement reform. So Newt really stepped into it this week, but he's got a pretty long history of doing that.
Neil King.
I mean, Newt Gingrich is an interesting and tragic figure in a variety of ways, but I think his main flaw in a lot of ways is that he's just a hyperbolist. I mean, he is an arch overstatement maker all the time. And what was fascinating about this week is that in the midst of regretting and retracting his overstatements, yesterday, his spokesman, Rick Tyler, sent out this extraordinary email that made the rounds and is worth reading because it makes great radio, where he described everybody opening fire on his boss and then saying, but the kind of fire that would kill almost any candidate. And then he went on to say, but out of the billowing smoke and dust of tweets and trivia emerged Gingrich, who once again ready to lead those who won't be intimidated by the political elite and are ready to take on the challenges of America's face forces.
He forgot to mention the glitter.
Yes. Well, it was a nightmarish week, or it has been for him, because he has various encounters that didn't go very well in Iowa. His leadoff trip to Iowa as an actual candidate. Then he ducks up to Minnesota to do some things up there for a night. And while he and his wife Calista are signing books, somebody comes up. I think he was a gay rights activist or something like that, and dumps glitter all over him and his wife. And it was just another embarrassment. Certainly wasn't his fault, but added to the sense of strangeness that this week has had for him.
You know, every Friday, Chris Eliza, no stranger to your audience from the Washington Post, announces who has the worst week in Washington. I think we know that'll be Newt Gingrich this week. But following Newt over the past week, I'm really struck. There's the old F. Scott Fitzgerald comment that there are no second acts in American lives. And the fact that we're still talking about Newt Gingrich after being dumped as Speaker years ago proves that that's false. Certainly, Richard Nixon had a million political lives. But I look at Joe Biden's first week when he announced for president 4 years ago. It was the same week that he said Barack Obama was articulate and clean and so forth. It was a devastating comment, yet he survived. I think Vice President Biden would tell you now that he's doing pretty well. So is it possible that Newt could come back from this? Certainly anything's possible in politics, but certainly the odds are stacked right now.
What do you think, Stuart Rothenberg?
I think it was remarkable that there were no immediate defenders of Newt coming out to talk about how he had contributed to the party over the years. I mean, this is a man of substantial stature. He was Speaker of the House of Representatives. He was the leading figure in the 1994 Republican Revolution. And now he just does seem like yesterday. I mean, I think that's his big problem. In an attempt to relaunch himself, we're all reminded of the fact that for Newt, everything is a clash of Western civilization versus something else. And it's just too much. He's kind of over the top. And it's really strange because Newt is a thinker. He's an idea guy. And you'd think that he would understand his own strengths and weaknesses. I mean, if you're analytical, you ought to be able to look at yourself. And he seems unable to do that in many ways.
Interesting that I've heard a couple of people say on this program that Newt comes out with 1,000 ideas in 5 minutes and one might be a good one. Would you agree with that?
That's been the joke about Newt for many years. Yeah, he spits out ideas, generates ideas, but often even his friends roll their eyes at some of them. So I think he really hurt himself coming out of the gate here. He is trying to reintroduce himself. He is trying to redefine himself, and I think he did it in a very, very unfortunate way.
Brendan Steinhauser, one person who hasn't been mentioned is Mitch Daniels.
Mitch Daniels has an impressive record as governor of Indiana. And remember, he was reelected pretty overwhelmingly in 2008 when Barack Obama carried Indiana. Mitch Daniels just finished up his legislative session. Everybody's looking at that record, a tax refund bill that gives tax dollars back to the taxpayers, a massive school vouchers program that conservatives are excited about. He has a pretty strong record. And I think if he gets in, he's going to make this race very interesting. And one of the biggest strengths I think that he has is electability. I believe he can beat Barack Obama in 2012.
And one of his big weaknesses, Neil King?
Oh, wow. Pop quiz. Well, certainly one of his big weaknesses is that he was George Bush's budget director. He was supervising the budget when we went from a big surplus to the deficit that we're now running. He was there when they pushed through the Medicare tax benefits. you know, when the tax cuts went through and so on and so forth. So that, I think, when he is very much of the fiscal hawk when it comes to Indiana. He has a very proven track record there. I think Democrats and even maybe some, no, I guess the Republicans wouldn't go after him so much on that, but Democrats certainly will if he goes forward. But I think in a lot of ways, the White House, when they look out over who they would least like to go up against, I think it's possible to say that Mitch Daniels is the person they would least likely like
Why?
To go. He's very affable. He's nice. He's funny. He's sort of, in some ways, the anti-Obama to the extent that he has no particular physical stature, but he's an extraordinarily gifted retail campaigner. Actually, anybody that has spent time in Indiana could tell you that. And he's good on the substance, and he has a record that he can run on.
What about his personal life,
well,
Stuart?
Yeah, I would say that he has a couple of big question marks. And his personal life, you're alluding to the fact that he's married the second time to his wife, and they obviously had there was an unusual relationship for most people. Most people don't remarry their ex-wives. So that's unusual. But I don't think that's his big problem. I think there are a couple of things. One is people say Americans want a truth teller. I've heard that a lot over the years, and I'm not entirely convinced that's the case, because the American people don't seem to be willing to choose between the programmatic cuts and the additional revenue tax increases that everybody really thinks we're going to have to do to deal with our financial problems. So do they really want a truth teller? And the second thing, and Diane, I know there are going to be listeners that are now going to be screaming at the radio, throwing stuff when I say this, but it's true, even though people don't like to hear it. Mitch Daniels is short, he is bald, and he has no charisma. And the question is whether the American public will take him seriously as president of the United States.
Stuart Rothenberg, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg Political Report. Short break, and we'll be right back. And we're talking in this hour about the Republican field of presidential possibilities with Neil King of the Wall Street Journal, Doug High, he's a Republican strategist, Stuart Rothenberg of the Rothenberg Political Report, and Brendan Steinhauser of Freedom Works. A number of people have written in to ask about Ron Paul. Should he be thought of as a serious candidate here?
I think Ron Paul is a serious candidate in that his message resonates. He was right about the financial crisis. He was right about the Federal Reserve and monetary policy. He was the guy sort of making these arguments years ago, and the political culture is now caught up to this. So I think that his message resonates with a lot of people. He was actually my congressman back in Texas. He was the first chairman of what later became Freedom Works. So we have a lot of ideas in common. And I think that he's going to do very well in terms of getting a following like he did last time and driving this message of limited government. So I think you have to look at Ron Paul and say, this is a guy whose message resonates and he is authentic.
Doug High.
Anybody who goes to the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, in Washington, knows that Ron Paul not only gets the loudest applause, but like Space Mountain, has the longest line of anybody who goes there. And he's a serious thinking person and talks about serious issues and has a following. But there's also, if you step back, the question of what really is a serious candidate. We saw in the Democratic primary last year, or last cycle, Chris Dodd, certainly an accomplished senator, got nowhere. Tom Vilsack, governor of Iowa, got nowhere. Dick Gephardt, who was the former majority leader in the House of Representatives for the Democrats when he ran previously, went nowhere. These are serious, accomplished people, yet their candidacies weren't really taken seriously, and that's that's a challenge that Ron Paul is going to face from a lot of people who just want to look down their nose at him and his campaign because of his supporters that they likened to Trekkies almost.
Ron Paul has certainly the most fervent following by far. I mean, it's no surprise to me that they're calling in or emailing here. When there's a debate, as there was in South Carolina a couple weeks ago, it seemed like there was a large proportion of people in the audience that were followers of his. But it seems to me, one thing that's interesting, if you look at the field, to the extent that there is one now, and you look at it in Iowa, we have all what I would call like solid 10 percenters, that these people that maybe are a little below or thereabout, but he's kind of a 10 or 12% guy. Gingrich is around that. Michelle Bachmann, if she comes in, she could take off. I actually think she could possibly win Iowa for a bunch of reasons, but Herman Cain, who's the former Godfather's Pizza guy, who's now in the 2 or 3%, but I think he could be around 10%. So we get to where in the end the guy who wins Iowa could be 25%, which is what Mitt Romney got last time around. But there are a lot of people that are fighting with these sort of small fervent followings that are around Ron Paul's size.
Stuart.
I think that Doug actually put it well. He asked what I call the Bill Clinton question. It depends on the meaning of a serious candidate. This is a person who's been a longtime member of Congress. He is serious intellectually. He's thoughtful. He's interesting. There is no way he will win the Republican nomination for president of the United States.
He is a
libertarian. The libertarian wing of the Republican Party exists. It's vocal. It's passionate. There are resources there. He can raise money. It's simply not broad enough. His position on the free market fits a lot of the Republican views, but his position on foreign policy, which is somewhat, I think we could call it isolationist, and his position on some lifestyle issues, cultural issues, drugs, things like that, legalization, just very out of sync with the Republicans. So he's an interesting guy. He's a thoughtful guy. He has his constituency, but it's just not big enough within the party.
Would you go that far, Doug, as to say he's simply not going to win this nomination?
He'll stay in for a long time, but I don't see a path to the nomination.
Okay. Here's an email from Barbara in San Antonio who says, "We in Texas hear that Governor Rick Perry might run. What do your panelists think, Brendan?"
Well, Rick Perry was governor in 2000 when I graduated from high school. He's been governor of Texas for a long time. Texas has grown economically. We've created jobs. He's kept taxes low. He has a pretty proven record. I don't think he'll seek the nomination. I think maybe in 2016 he's someone to look at. I do think he has a lot of support among the Tea Party movement, the groups in Texas. He was one of the first elected officials around the country to actually see the power of this movement, and he went to their meetings and he spoke with them, and I think that a lot of them support what he's done as governor. So I think that he's a strong candidate maybe in 2016, but probably won't run in 2012.
I called his camp actually yesterday because these are all these sort of rumors start building about who's the next guy that everybody can look to. And I talked to one of his main people. He said, there's absolutely no way. The governor said that to me himself a few months ago. It's similar to, the kind of wistful even thinking that's headed towards Chris Christie in New Jersey. There's, delegations going there hoping to bring him in, et cetera. He's saying up, down, sideways, he's not going to run. I think it's pretty clear he's not. I think at this point, we're not going to probably see too many surprises come running over the, or charging over the horizon right
now. All right. Stuart, tell us about John Huntsman, who's on the front page of the Washington Post this morning. Lots of people talking about him, former ambassador to China in the Obama administration. Lots of folks said that's why the Obama administration sent him to China to get him off the scene. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just did a column on John Huntsman on Tuesday's roll call. There's an opening for somebody like Huntsman. Huntsman has plenty of assets. He's good looking. He's from a wealthy family and has some personal wealth. He's generally seen as having been a good governor of Utah, a popular governor, successful governor. And, of course, he has a lot of foreign policy experience. So, I mean, there are lots of reasons why he should be taken seriously. And he's put together a team, John Weaver, a number of strategists, operatives, consultants, Fred Davis.
How conservative is he?
Not as conservative as the Republican Party. He has a number of problems, obviously. Not only did he technically work for Barack Obama's ambassador to China, but he's also apparently the Daily Caller wrote that there are a number of letters, effusive letters, about how wonderful Barack Obama is, and Republican caucus goers and primary voters won't like that. But not only that, he has talked about the need to address the carbon issue, raising the question of both a carbon tax and cap and trade. Republican voters don't like that. He has supported civil unions. Republican voters don't like that. So, Diane, he looks like a really nice package. But to those of us who've been around, it kind of smells like a bunch of guys have gotten together and sat around a room for 3 hours drinking beer and wine and come up with this scenario, this guy, and let's do. And he doesn't really quite fit the party. So he has some personal skills and abilities and assets, but he's got these huge liabilities that I think when critics start focusing on his positions in the past, a lot of primary voters won't like it. He has one thing going for him. He's a happy candidate. He's upbeat. He's not negative. He's not mean. He doesn't bash everybody at every moment. And kind of voters like that.
Doug.
The Washington Post article that you referenced earlier, the headline said GOP moderate. And that's a real obstacle for him because that's something that Republican primary voters, Republican caucus goers, don't want to see. We're a conservative party. We're going to nominate a conservative. So part of how Governor Huntsman will have to tailor his message will be to conservatives about how he will govern in a conservative manner. Spending will be a topic on that.
Brenton, how would Tea Party folks feel about Huntsman?
Well, I think there's a lot to learn about him still. It's quite early. I don't know that he has a lot of name ID right now, but I do agree with what the other two guests said. I think he is much more moderate than the Republican Party is right now, and frankly, I don't think that he'll energize the Tea Party groups in the way that other candidates would. I wouldn't count him out. I know that he was popular in Utah when I spent some time there, but I also know a lot of conservatives and Tea Partiers in Utah who backed Mike Lee didn't like some of the things that the governor did. So it's going to be interesting.
Neil.
I think the guy who had probably the best week this week is one person that we have not mentioned at all, which is the former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, because by sitting back and watching various people either flame out or get close to flaming out, starts to validate what is his whole campaign strategy, which is to be the other guy, the alternative to Romney. If the party or voters decide they don't like Romney at whatever juncture, they'll turn to, you know, this man that has so much going for him but still can't seem to break beyond 3 or 4% support. This is a similar position that Huntsman's in. It's basically this sort of race among the good-looking, you know, establishment guys as to who will be the fallback to Romney, and it's Huntsman and Pawlenty sort of fighting it out for that second place. And I think Pawlenty, it's interesting because he has so far done nothing to break out, nothing to show that he's gaining traction, and yet he is having two big fundraisers, or has this week. He had a very big one last week, and the establishment, the big money people, the bundlers, are really starting to look to him as an alternative to Romney. And that's sort of his whole game plan, is that whether it'll actually break out or work is another question.
Do you see Michelle Bachmann as a serious contender?
If she gets in the race, she'll be able to raise a lot of money very quickly. And it's a strength that she'll be able to bring, too. You know, with Neil saying that he thinks that she can take Iowa, that being a neighboring state, she can be a very serious candidate who goes very far. One thing I'd like to ask of Stu, because I think you'll know this better than I, her congressional district is not a slam dunk, and there's redistricting going on this cycle. So I'd be interested to know where Stu thinks that direction may take her. I remember 1996, Bob Dornan had a very competitive congressional district. I don't think he's withdrawn from the presidential campaign of 96 yet, but it ended up hurting him very badly. And he ended up losing that seat.
Obviously, redistricting has an effect on either. These are strategic politicians. These are folks that – this is a career for many of them. So you had in Indiana where Congressman Donnelly's district was made dramatically more Republican. He decided to run for the Senate. So the question is what will happen in Michelle Bachmann's district. I think she's in a pretty good part of the state where her district is going to be okay. But I think that – I think she can't resist, frankly. I think it's Neil Rhodes, and I believe that she's really moving toward running. And I do think she can win Iowa in a very strange way. She grew up; she was born and grew up in Iowa until she was like 12 or 13. Yeah. So she can make that connection. This is a caucus that's going to be dominated by social conservatives, the pro-lifers, and she speaks so passionately to them. So, does that make her a serious contender for the Republican presidential nominee? Boy, I have a hard time imagining that they will nominate her for president. But in Iowa?
Well, we've worked with – FreedomWorks has worked with and known Bachmann since she was a freshman in Congress. She's voted the right way in all the major economic issues that we follow. And one of the things that has given her a lot of credibility with the Tea Party movement is that if you remember some of the big rallies on Capitol Hill that we were planning and involved in, she was one of the congressmen that actually went out and said, you know, join me, come to Capitol Hill and work with me to try to defeat this health care bill. So a lot of folks around the country who are now funding her campaign or funding her congressional campaign, and I believe she is in the race for the presidency, those folks remember being on Capitol Hill when she was speaking to them and calling them to come and work to defeat the Obamacare bill. So I wouldn't count her out. I absolutely think she could win Iowa.
Brendan Steinhauser, he's director of federal and state campaigns for FreedomWorks, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And joining us now from Virginia is Linda Chavez. She's chair of the Center for Equal Opportunity. Good morning to you, Linda. Linda, are you there? I'm afraid we've lost her.
I'm here.
Is she there?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, good. Glad to have you with us. Talk about the so-called hard-edged conservatives. You apparently don't think they have much of a chance. How come?
Well, I think everyone recognizes that the single biggest issue facing America right now is our debt and getting control of the federal budget. And so the hard-edged conservatives that are focused particularly on the social issues, I think are going to have to make a decision about whether or not they're going to push the social issues to the forefront or whether they're going to concentrate on the issue that is more likely to result in victory. And I think that's why a candidate like Michelle Bachmann, although she does talk passionately about the deficit, I think her base is really much more among social conservatives, evangelicals, the religious right. And I think the other question is whether or not the candidate that emerges is someone who's going to be able to appeal to independents, because getting the nomination is only the first part, and actually winning the election means being able to reach out and get voters who do not identify with each and every one of the party's platforms to cross over and to vote Republican. And I think that's where the social conservatives are going to end up having to decide whether or not they want to win and therefore focus on a candidate who can reach out to those independents.
And Linda, tell me how badly you believe Republicans have hurt themselves with Hispanic voters on immigration.
Well, it's interesting. I think Republicans are right now benefiting from the fact that, with the exception of some places like Arizona, where immigration continues to be a very hot-button issue, the issue has died down somewhat as a salient issue politically. People are much more focused on the deficit. They're more focused on the size of government. They're more focused on whether or not we should repeal Obamacare. And so I think that actually works to the benefit of Republicans. And we actually saw in the fall elections that a surprising number About a third of Hispanics did, in fact, cast their votes for the Republican candidates in the various races. And, you know, it's a question now whether or not Republicans can discipline themselves during the primaries not to say things that are going to absolutely turn off this growing part of the electorate. It's still a group that primarily votes Democratic, but in past elections, going back to Richard Nixon in 1972, Richard Nixon got a third of Mexican-American votes in the 1972 election. Ronald Reagan in 84 got over 40% of Hispanic votes in that election.
So looking at the Republican field as it stands now, is there anyone about whom Hispanic or Latino voters are getting excited?
Well, I don't know that there's any candidate that they're getting excited about. I think it's going to depend on, you know, who emerges and whether that person basically, you know, is disciplined enough not to, you know, have the kind of rhetoric that's going to turn off Hispanic voters. The big issue with Hispanics is going to be turnout, and the turnout could very well be very low. They're disappointed in President Obama.
Linda Chavez, she's chair of the Center for Equal Opportunity. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And when we come back, time to open the phones.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. By the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
The folklore of Newfoundland comes alive in a new novel all about love and survival. The story of two families who battle the elements, superstition, and each other. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And it's time to open the phones as we talk about the Republican presidential hopefuls. First to Christine in St. Petersburg, Florida. Good morning. You're on the air. Christine, are you there? Well, Christine said she had a prediction that it's going to be Jeb Bush. Any thoughts, Stu?
Well, she can probably make a lot of money if she goes to Vegas and bets on that. I think a lot of us think Jeb Bush would be a terrific candidate, maybe the best candidate the party had if he had just had a different last name. I mean, he's an incredibly impressive guy, a successful governor, a thoughtful guy, a good speaker. People meet him, they like him, but I think the last name is just too big a problem.
Brendan.
if it were 2000 and we were talking about that election, Jeb Bush would definitely be a great candidate. 2016, maybe. Jeb Bush does have a great record in Florida, especially when you contrast that with Charlie Crist. Jeb has a lot of – he built kind of a Republican Party that looks like the conservative Republican Party of today nationally. So I don't think he'll get in the race, maybe in 2016, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Go ahead.
I think one of the attributes that Jeb Bush brings also is going back to Linda Chavez's call, is his real outreach. He speaks Spanish fluently, has gotten a lot of support from Hispanics over the years. And Neil wrote a piece yesterday that the headline, I may get word for word wrong, was as GOP, as field thins, Republicans look elsewhere. And so Jeb Bush is part of that. Fortunately, we're having that conversation in May. If we were having that conversation 3 weeks before the Iowa caucus, Brendan and I certainly would be very nervous. Stu and Neil would be excited, probably.
Neil.
I mean, the looking elsewhere, there's a lot of that that's going on. I think, well, if it's a prediction about Jeb Bush, I think he definitely doesn't get in. I think one thing is always interesting, every election is about the next election, too, and there are certain people like Michelle Bachmann we were talking about. Pawlenty might well be in that camp. You run in order to build your right name recognition, establish your track record, get an organization in place, et cetera, for the next time. And there are a certain number of people we could easily identify that are more 2016 people than they are really 2012 people. I think Jeb Bush could afford to wait around and be a fresh 2016 person.
Okay. And, yeah. All right. To O'Fallon, Missouri. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. I think the whole slate of Republican candidates is in lockstep with the Tea Party wing and some of the social conservatives, but I think they're kind of out of step with mainstream America when you look at most polls, and I think essentially what it will take to get the nomination will eliminate someone from, I think, seriously competing in the general election where you don't have such extremes of opinion about things. Thank you.
Thank you, Brendan.
Well, I think the lesson of 2010 was that the Tea Party movement and the values it represents and the message won the day. And I think if we stick to that same message, if we focus on the national debt, we focus on the deficits and jobs and the economy, we'll absolutely have a chance to be very successful in 2012. And one thing we haven't mentioned is that the Republicans, and I think conservative Republicans, will take back the Senate pretty easily in 2012.
Stu, do you agree?
Well,
with
I would
that?
Say... two things. First, I would say to Jerry that I think if the 2012 election is about Barack Obama and people are unhappy with the president's performance at that time, including unemployment, economic growth, or the lack of it, then I think a Republican who has broader appeal, and there are some in this party, Romney, Pawlenty, Mitch Daniels, then I think they could win. So I wouldn't dismiss them so quickly. As to the Senate, there are a lot of Democratic Senate seats that are vacant or in play, and I think the Republicans have a very real chance of taking the Senate. The Senate is absolutely in play.
Do you agree, Neil?
Well, just to go back to Jerry's point, I mean, it is interesting. I think the primary and caucus system that's in place does Democrats well because Iowa is a good sort of testing ground for Democrats, as Obama proved. I think it's much more problematic for Republicans and tends to cause this kind of warping effect in South Carolina, which tends to be the third big one and the really kind of the must-win state, also has a similar effect. So a lot of times the Republican candidates have to kind of warp themselves to the right and then try to swing back to the center once they're nominated, and that causes, I think, more difficulties than is the case among Democrats going through the same process.
Tell us about Herman Cain, Doug.
Herman Cain, very successful businessman, ran the Godfather's Pizza chain successfully for many years. Is somebody who's been very involved in politics in Georgia, but also nationally, has been a Tea Party leader and has some very vocal support within the party. It may be small support, but it's very vocal.
Brendan.
He's real. He's authentic. He's a businessman. He comes from the private sector. That's very attractive. He's a great speaker. He connects with people. He has this deep, booming voice. You believe him when you talk to him. And I definitely think he's someone that we should look at, and I think he'll get a second look as people start to pay closer attention when this thing heats up.
Stu?
I probably interviewed Herman Cain the first time maybe, 10 years ago. He was running for the United States Senate in Georgia, and I heard about this businessman who I had to meet, and he came in. He is a charismatic guy, and that's, you know, there are people we're talking about as credible candidates who lack that personal charisma and excitement. Herman Cain has it. The question is, There's a guy who's never held elective office, who has never demonstrated an appeal, an ability to run a national campaign. Running for president is a national campaign. Should I really believe that at the end of the day he's going to be the Republican nominee? Look, everybody's worth watching now. We give everybody a chance. I think our job is to look at everybody and let the voters decide. He's an interesting guy, but he has a really long haul.
Nate.
You know, he has spent so much time in Iowa. He's probably been the most, you know, indefatigable campaigner of anybody out there. But what I hear from people that really like him and have met him numerous times in Iowa is that he's great the first time, he's great the second time, and he starts to wear thin a little bit on the second or the third or fourth time, mainly on the issues. He's thin on a lot of things. He doesn't have the track record a lot of people have. And he, you know, he took a position in the South Carolina debate where he said he would make up his mind about whether we should stay in Afghanistan and Iraq once he had all the facts. And when I talked to him later about it, he wouldn't have all the facts until they got into the White House when he had an intelligence briefing. And I don't think you can really run for president when you're saying, I'm not going to say what my position on Iraq and Afghanistan is until I'm elected, and then I'll know all the facts.
Doug.
Well, that's a real issue that he has to face. One of the things Republicans talked about 4 years ago is 3 years ago is that Barack Obama didn't have enough foreign policy experience. And, you know, even though we've caught bin Laden, it's something that Republicans still look at. So Republican candidates, even though the election is going to be won on domestic issues and energy prices and jobs and the economy, you'll have to demonstrate some foreign policy expertise.
Let's go to Williamsburg, Virginia. Good morning, Ricky. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was somewhat disappointed that your all-male panel in their previous discussion of Mitch Daniels did not think it was important to mention his denial of basic medical care to the women of Indiana because of the provider. Daniels is the father of four girls, but I find his recent withdrawal of medical care for women in Indiana to be very disappointing.
Stewart.
Well, I think Republican caucus attendees and primary voters are going to be focusing on some other issues. I think there are going to be plenty of things that Mitch Daniels has done
including tolling roads and selling them.
Sure. That was very controversial when he first took office. The smart thing that Mitch did is when he got in office, he did a couple of very controversial things. There were some tax issues and the roads, and he overcame that. And, you know, signing this bill, eliminating funding for Planned Parenthood, you know, that will be controversial with some people, but probably not in the Republican Party. And that's mostly what we've been talking about so far.
I mean, Mitch Daniels got himself into a little bit of a box last year when he made this famous statement that he thought there should be a truce on the social issues and Republicans should focus on what really matters, which is a funny statement because I think most people already knew that and really wanted to move forward on that basis. But by saying it, he caused a big stink among the Republican Party. In some ways, I think he made a certain head fake in the direction of the whole social conservative issue by having done what was obviously a fairly big move by banning funding for Planned Parenthood, in some ways to kind of quell that side of his party, potentially to move forward with the presidential bid.
And the Daniels decision came just after Congress heavily debated whether or not to fund Planned Parenthood. So Republican voters, caucus goers, primary voters, they support this, and politically very smart for Governor Daniels.
Brenton.
I'd just like to add, I've been to Indiana three times this year in working with grassroots conservatives, and we talked a lot among the socially conservative voters out there about Mitch Daniels and about what was going on politically. And anyone who had any issue or question about the truce comment now has pretty much come and said, by doing this, he shows how he'll handle these issues. And there's a lot of support now, even among social conservatives in Indiana, for taking that move of signing that bill. I think that's going to absolutely help him with social conservatives in the GOP primary.
Do you think that despite the personal history that Stu talked about earlier, the fact that his wife left him and the four children, went off, married someone else, then came back, said it was a mistake, remarried. Do you think that's going to hurt him with the conservative voters?
I really don't. I think we all have families who have tough issues that we go through, and who hasn't known someone that's gone through something like that? So I think that actually doesn't hurt him at all. And I think to the extent someone brings that up and attacks him, it will backfire on those making those criticisms. I think that this is something that all of us go through, dealing with tough family problems.
Anybody else?
Well, I would simply say that given the news that we get about politicians having children out of wedlock and affairs and Charlie Sheen living with goddesses, Mitch Daniels kind of looks like white bread here. He remarried his wife. I know it's still an unusual story, but no, I don't think it'll hurt him.
Do you agree?
I agree. I mean, if anything, it's a heroic story in some ways. I mean, it's obviously
because he took her back.
Well, not only did he take her back, but anybody in the middle of their 30s or 40s, whatever he was at that time, having to raise four children, it was obviously a somewhat odd or unusual move for her to have gone off. But if we're talking about him and what he did, I think it's pretty hard to impugn anything that he did.
All right. Of course, you talk about a governor having had a child out of wedlock. Would he have likely been elected had people known about that? We're talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, Stu.
Wow. I don't know, but it would have created a whole different discussion about who he was and questions of trustworthiness and integrity and relationships. And you see what had happened to John Edwards. It has just totally destroyed his reputation. So I can't speak to the specific case. I can't know exactly what would have happened. But, it would have changed the whole conversation.
Well, and John Edwards kept denying and denying and denying and then finally acknowledged to Birmingham, Alabama. Good morning, Laura.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Good morning. I was hoping your guests might comment on New Jersey Governor Christie and what they think his chances might be in this.
He has said no. How many times now, Doug?
No, he said no repeatedly. I'll tell you, I was born in Red Bank, New Jersey, and I'm thrilled to see not only a Republican finally win. Republicans have always said, this is our year, this is our year, and it's never been our year. Finally, we had our year. But he said repeatedly that he won't get in. I have no reason to doubt that he'll be true to that.
Why?
I'd love him to run. I think he's a strong candidate.
Why won't he get in?
Well, I think he's got a tough job to do as governor. And if he runs, just politically, if he runs and doesn't win, I think the voters in New Jersey will look at him as somebody who tried to leave then.
Republican strategist Doug High, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Neil King.
I was just going to make one comment about Chris Christie. I think it's interesting with the dropouts of Mike Huckabee and Donald Trump, we lost the truly nice, affable guy and the bombast guy. And the interesting thing about Chris Christie is he would bring them both together. He's an affable, bombastic person, and is one of the things that one of the reasons that a lot of Republicans like him.
All right, Emil, you're on the air. Hello. Go right ahead, sir.
Sorry, is this me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I have to begin by first rebutting something one of your guests said regarding something your first caller said, that the 2010 election proved that the GOP is right to be enthralled to the Tea Party. It isn't. The midterm elections historically go to an opposition first. And secondly, in 2010, quite a number of Tea Party darlings went down to defeat. So having said that, I also have to preface my question by saying that I'm a Democrat and I'm definitely not a Gingrich supporter, but I sympathize with him in the storm that has hit him, because the GOP must be aware that being in thrall to the Tea Party is not going to play well in the national election. So why is it that when Gingrich tries to gently tug the party back to the center, which is where national elections are won, he's branded a heretic with this kind of unanimity?
Neil King.
I mean, I think it's a very good question. I mean, the problem that Gingrich had politically is he tried to be just too subtle and too refined at a very early part of the campaign when I don't think that's advised necessarily. But his points, I mean, he tried to make a refined point about what sort of mandate we should have on insurance, and he kind of backed something similar to what Obama backed in terms of an individual mandate, and then he had to back off. And then he went after the core achievement of the Republican majority in the House, which was the Ryan budget and Medicare, while also making an important point that isn't the be-all, end-all, and we need to go beyond it and do other things. And so he got savaged from the right for that. So I agree with him to an extent. I also think it was maladroit politically.
Dad.
I disagree with it, with the comments about the Tea Party. Having been involved in the elections last cycle, I saw and met with activists who were organized, engaged, and that's a good thing. If you're a Democrat and your activists are engaged and enthusiastic, that's a good thing for you. I think in some of the primaries, we had situations where candidates won who perhaps shouldn't have, but we also had candidates who lost who shouldn't have. If Mike Castle, who was the congressman, the heir apparent to that Senate seat, had actually taken his Senate race seriously, we wouldn't have known who Christine O'Donnell was, frankly.
Go ahead, Brendan. Why don't you go?
Well, I just wanted to address that as well and say the rising stars of the Republican Party are Tea Party governors, senators, congressmen. You look at folks like Nikki Haley in South Carolina, elected governor, big Tea Party support from the beginning. John Kasich in Ohio is sort of a guy that's been around a long time but has the credibility of the Tea Party, and they like what he's done. You look at Pat Toomey in the Senate, another guy who's been around, a fiscal conservative from the beginning, but he got a lot of Tea Party support in Pennsylvania. Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, these are the people that are the new rising stars of the Republican Party, and they've all got Tea Party backing.
Two quick things. First of all, as to the caller, Paul Ryan is not a Tea Party person. Mm-hmm. His budget may be embraced by the Tea Party, but he is not a Tea Party person. I think Newt's problem was the use of the phrase, I think it was right-wing social engineering. Conservatives generally don't use the phrase right-wing, and social engineering is an explosive term with conservatives over many years, and it defines what they think the left does, not what the right does. So I think it was an example of Newt picking words that were explosive, and he didn't realize where the flak was going to come. And just second of all, I think the question is Tea Party candidates or candidates supported by the Tea Party, and I think there's a difference there.
And you know what? I'm going to let you all off the hook and not ask who you think is going to be the Republican nominee. Neil King, Doug High, Stuart Rothenberg, Brendan Steinhauser, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.